It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And we have had some events that are worth noting. One of the premier events, I got out and started really looking closely. Out behind my garage, there's a Bebb's Willow that is particularly optimistic, let's say, about winter or spring. And this year is no exception. I counted about a half a dozen little white catkins, little white pussy willows, aments, they're sometimes called, open and exposed to the air. So there are some pussy willows to be observed on that particular bush. There was another bush when I ran the mail route up on County Road 330 that had a real early outbreak of pussy willows every spring. And I think it's just genetics. I think some of these plants are just that optimistic. I did find an optimistic aspen down by the end of my driveway, down where the sun shines on it pretty much all day. It's sitting in a spot where the sun can hit it early in the morning, shine on it throughout the day, and even hit it late in the afternoon. And I noticed that particular aspen had little white aments or catkins beginning to break out of the buds on that one. And that's a bit early. Usually mid-February is when the aspens really start to bud with their first furry little male flowers. And we'll keep an eye on that. This one may be genetically inclined as the willow is behind the garage. Hard to say. At the same time, it might be that it's just got the right aspect, so to speak. I was out with my neighbor, actually with the granddaughter of my neighbor, Marvin, Marvin Beer. His granddaughter, Alyssa, is out, and we went for a snowshoe hike. We were looking for red osier dogwoods and anything that had a sort of a red cast out there, and we found a lot of willows that were quite red and some very beautiful red osier dogwoods as well. And then I went cross-country skiing this past week, and I have to tell you, it's been, it was a fabulous moment for skiing the day that I went out. That fresh quarter inch or whatever it was, that little dusting of snow that we got gave lots of sharp crystals to bite into the wax, so I had great propulsion and good glide. I went down the trail so fast that when I got to the end of my trail, I wasn't satisfied. I didn't want to turn around and come home, so I extended the trail. And at one point, while I was bushwhacking, I decided, you know, this is really stupid. I should take these skis off and just walk. So I did. I took the skis off and threw them over my shoulder and just walked and covered quite a bit of more ground, and then got back on the trails and zipped home. But while I was on the trail, there were lots of spots where there were scat and urine from various canids, fox, wolves, and probably, I don't know if there were coyotes involved or not, but lots of scent posts out right now. They're busy getting themselves advertised, and you can check that out. The deer are still kicking away snow to get at the stuff that's underneath. Not sure, you know, what they're finding, probably green grass or maybe some agronomy. Some of those plants are agrimony. Some of those plants that are right down at the ground level that are still green. Anyway, the snow's only about 9 inches deep, so apparently they don't mind kicking it away and finding what green they can down below. My good friends Bob and Cheryl Tkarchuk over in Cherry, Minnesota, have a flock of evening grosbeaks at their house, a huge flock of evening grosbeaks, and it's quite stunning to see the pictures. Check out KAXE, KBXE's Facebook page for some close-ups of some of those beautiful evening grosbeaks that are hanging out at their house. Used to be that that was the case everywhere, and then all of a sudden, it wasn't the case anywhere, at least not around here. Pretty rare to see evening grosbeaks these days. Gray squirrel showed up at my bird feeder the other day. I don't see many gray squirrels. This is only the maybe fourth or fifth time in 35, 36 years that I've been living out there that I've seen a gray squirrel. So that was noteworthy. I did see a cottontail rabbit the other day when I was out with the dog. Ran from its kind of hiding place up under some balsams and dashed under one of those abandoned cars that I keep for parts. And so it was found its safe spot as the dog kind of closed in on it. I've told you that I had seen a number of bald eagles. I've seen that maybe it's the same bald eagle, but I've seen this bald eagle a couple of times in the last few days this past week. Coming by, swinging past the old nest, which is in my front yard, and one of them was heading toward the new nest, which is across the way, across a little tamarack swamp in a big white pine that I can kind of spy into when they're there. So the eagles are definitely around the area. And finally, I had a northern shrike show up at my feeder this past week, and boy, it sure made the birds quiet down. And my father-in-law, who lives about 4 miles north of me, had the same experience. A northern shrike showed up at his feeder, and then there was a beautiful picture by Sue Kessler on KAXCKBXC's Season Watch page of a northern shrike in her neighborhood. So northern shrikes are definitely in the area. And I'd written something about northern shrikes a few years ago, and I'd like to just kind of catch you up on what it is exactly. So here's what I wrote in January of 2011. There's an odd bird that shows up here in the Northland every winter, not odd in the sense that it has extraordinary plumage or flies in an unusual fashion. Rather, it is a songbird that eats flesh. It actively hunts down, attacks, and kills mice, voles, insects, and even other songbirds. All other birds with such eating habits are relegated to the raptors group, not the northern shrike. It maintains a membership with the passerines. Passerines, roughly defined, are perching birds that possess vocal organs and are capable of songs. They also have particular arrangement of toes, 3 forward, 1 backward, and muscles that tighten and secure the perch when they sleep. The shrike meets these requirements, but its habit of preying upon its fellow songbirds makes it a bit of a pariah within the order. The northern shrike is a robin-sized bird with ash-gray plumage on the body and black wings and tail. The tail has white feathers along the outer edges, and there is a white patch evident on the wings when the bird is in flight. The head is neatly bisected by a black slash of feathers. Starting from the base of the beak, the beak is large and black, and it has a prominent hook at the tip. To a casual observer, it might be mistaken for the more commonly seen gray jay, but the presence of the black colors on the wing and tail should be definitive, for the gray jay only has black on its head. Our northern shrike has many names across its range: butcher bird, winter butcher bird, northern butcher bird, nine killer, all stemming from its scientific name Lanius excubitor. Lanius is for butcher and excubitor is for sentinel, a perfect description of the bird's habits. It often perches at the highest vantage point in the area, and when it has captured its prey, it will impale it upon a thorn or barb, sometimes hanging it from a crotch in a shrub, somewhat like the butcher who advertises his goods in his window. Speculation has it that the shrike hangs its meals because its feet lack the strength required to hold the victim while the bird tears away the flesh. Stories of eyewitnesses to attacks reinforce this idea. Rather than strike with its feet as a hawk or owl might, the shrike uses its beak to subdue its adversaries. One such observation involves a field mouse dragged to the surface of the snow, then released so that the shrike might find a better purchase on it. The mouse immediately attacked and sprang at the shrike, driving it back several feet. The shrike was able to parry the attacks, using its beak to deflect the advances. Hoping it had gained enough space to beat a retreat, the mouse turned and ran. In 2 quick bounds, the shrike was on the mouse, and grabbing it by the neck, shook it vigorously from side to side the way a dog might shake a rat. Pausing, the shrike bit the mouse along the neck and killed it. The hook at the end of the bird's beak is designed to facilitate this clipping of the neck and works as well for birds as mammals. One of the long-held beliefs about shrikes is that they are indiscriminate killers, that they would kill more critters than they could possibly eat. In Africa, where five members of the family are known locally as fiscals, from their rapacity, which no revenue officer could exceed, Israeli researchers discovered that males are more likely to hang meals and leave them as display for their ability to be good providers. Female shrikes are more likely to mate with those males who had more bountiful larders. The same may be true of local shrikes. We don't see much of their courtship and nesting rituals in northern Minnesota because they occur in the nesting grounds, and those are farther north of us in northern Canada and Alaska. That's about all you need to know about the northern shrike, except that when he shows up at your house, you'll notice the fact that all the other birds have left the area and gone to ground. That's the Phenology Show for today. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back again next week.
You can get Phenology on our website as well as the student Phenology reports. Go to kexe.org. You can also sign up for podcasts through iTunes.